Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David Mitchell, 12th hour Puff Daddy Saturday, Elijah David, Texas. Today is June 8, 2017, our decision 14, 2021. We will start our first show today with a song entitled, We Have an Anchor that keeps the soul. Judgment of the Living, Part 1. Okay, we're going to start with Shepherd Rod, Volume 2, And we're going to deal with page 219. We're going to start with Reformation in View. It says, the Great Reformation in View, vividly represented by the angel of the golden at the golden altar, with the prayers of the saints, and the casting of the fire from the altar onto the earth, is foretold also in the following testimony. In the visions of the night, representations passed before me of a great reformatory movement among Elohim's people. Many were praising Yahweh, the sick were healed, and other miracles were wrought. A spirit of intercession was seen, even as was manifested before the great day of the Pentecost. Hundreds and thousands were seen visiting families and opening before them the word of Yahweh. Hearts were convicted by the power of the Holy Spirit. And a spirit of the genuine conversion was manifest. On every side, doors were thrown open unto the proclamation of the truth. A world seemed to be lightened with the heavenly influence. Great blessings were received by the true and humble people of the Yahweh. Testimony for the Church, Volume 9, page 126. My brethren, the Yahweh is speaking unto us. Shall we not heed His voice? Shall we not trim our lamps and act like men who look for the Yahshua to come? For the time is one that calls for the light bearing and for action. Awake, I beseech you, from the sleep of the dead, that not the last day finds you destitute of the heavenly treasure. Are all the living judged and sealed under the seventh seal? Or have some been considered before its opening? For the answering of this question, we quote Revelation 8:3. And another angel came and stood at the altar having a golden censer, and it was given unto him much incense that he should offer it with the prayers of all saints upon the golden altar, which was before the throne. Note the prayer is offered for all saints. No one knowing Elohim's truth would dare pray for the dead, for it is an abomination in Yahweh's sight. Much less would an angel commit such sin. The psalmist declares that prayers for the dead are the invention of the heathen, for they join themselves also unto Baal Peor, and ate the sacrifices of the dead. Thus they provoked him to anger with their inventions, and the plague break in upon them, Psalms 106:28-29. The dead praise not the Yahweh, neither any that go down into silence, Psalms 115-17. If the dead praise not Yahweh, how can an angel offer a prayer for them before Yahweh? A praise all saints has reference to all the living who are to be judged. Evidently, this is done under the seventh seal. If all, then it is definite that all the living saints are counted under the seventh seal. Thus, with the opening of the last seal, commences the judgment for all the living saints. Let nothing confuse you on this point. If we say the prayers of all saints had some connection with the dead, then they should have been offered at the commencement of the judgment, the opening of the first seal, for after judgment the prayers cannot profit them. Note the words, at the opening of the judgment for the dead in 1844. And when he had taken the book, the four beasts and 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, having every one of them harps and golden vials full of the odors, which are the prayers of the saints. Revelation 5:8. Mark that no angel offered a prayer, but the prayers of the saints were presented by the beast and elders through the praise by the harps and golden vials full of the odors. That is, there was no prayer offered for the dead, but their prayers which they had prayed being recorded while they were yet alive were presented before the throne. 144,000 are sealed before the silence of half an hour, are at the opening of the seal, but they are judged in the period of the seventh seal. For the prayer was for all saints, the living. Is there any way whereby we can determine the time of the opening of the seal and the commencement of the judgment for the living? If Yahweh so faithfully revealed unto the living the commencement of the judgment for the dead, it cannot be possible that he would keep secret the time of the judgment for the living. If he did, he would have no present truth in the time of the last seal. Neither could there be justice in such secrecy, nor could such judgment be legal. Therefore, a revelation of the judgment for the living is of as great importance as the revelation of the gospel itself. For the judgment, blotting out of the sin, is the crowning act in the gospel of the Yahshua. Thus we conclude that when the seal is open and the judgment for the living began, we must know it, the day of the atonement, and its type proves the same for the Israelites, for well informed of the event, their duty, and the consequence. The date of that most glorious event for the righteous, but exceeding solemn for the wicked, will be made known at the fulfillment of the following verse. And the angel took the censer and filled it with the fire of the altar and cast it into the earth. And there were voices and thunderings and lightnings and earthquake. Revelation 8:5. The casting of the fire from the altar into the earth is the outpouring of the Spirit of Yahweh. We have stated before that the book of Revelation is a revealing of the prophecy and not a prophecy of itself. Therefore, we find the prediction of this glorious event in Joel 2:28-29. The voices and thunderings and lightnings denote the opening of the judgment for the living, as they also denote the opening of the judgment for the dead. See Revelation 4:5. The earthquake will be the sign of the event. Summary of commencement and testimony of the seal. The first seal covers the entire period from Adam until the flood. The second, from the flood unto Abraham. The third, from Abraham unto Yahshua. The fourth, from Yahshua to 1500 A.D. The fifth, from 1500 A.D. to 1755. And the sixth is from 1755 A.D. Until the fulfillment of the Ezekiel 9. Now, why wasn't V.T. Holliff able to give a date when the sixth seal comes to an end? Because it wasn't given to the Adventists to know the end of the sixth seal when it comes to an end. Because that brings to the close the end of the judgment for the dead. And see, and V.T. Hall is teaching in the 1930 that he was in the judgment of the living. So then V.T. Hall in another place would have to teach that Ezekiel 9 showed the fulfillment of the sixth seal, the judgment for the dead. And he had to show, and V.T. Hall wrote this. He said this took place in 1930 at the beginning of the rod. But he didn't put it here in Shepherd Rod Volume 2. So this shows right here the inconsistency of V.T. Hollis trying to explain something that he didn't have inspiration on. And when he did, he got in trouble. Because he said the 11th hour was the last hour on the parabolic time clock, and that and it started in 1930, and he said that he was that fifth group of laborers that was called in Matthew 20, verse 6. He didn't consider himself a part of the fourth group of laborers of the Seventh-day Adventists, because he called the Adventist fourth group a movement, and then that fifth group he calls a movement. And so, therefore, he is able to give the dates, because I think Ellen G. White gave these dates herself. And he was just copying the dates that she gave. But it says that the fulfillment of Ezekiel 9 brings to a close the sixth seal, the judgment of the dead. And I got the prophecy on that one, showed that that took place at Passover 2002. And Ezekiel 9 was kicked into operation. The judgment of the living, the seventh seal. Then he goes on to say the seventh seal then, after Ezekiel 9 opens, and it goes to the end of probation. So he left off giving dates in 1755. The sixth seal from 1755 to the fulfillment of Ezekiel 9. Okay, so if he's going to say then that the sixth seal was opened in 1755, then he'd have to say that was the beginning of the judgment of the dead. But the judgment of the dead begins 1844. So this is another discrepancy. So I'm going to say, as of right now, that this 1755 date is not an accurate date. It belongs to 1844, the beginning of the sixth seal. All right. However, the seals, in one sense of the word, do not close. They continue and overlap each other. For instance, the inhabitants of the earth are still multiplying, Adam conquering and to conquer. The wars among the nations are ever on the increase, and peace has departed from the earth. Thus the sword is still in the writer's hand. Commercialism is ever growing. The balances and persecution has not ceased, but it is to revive and to bring about a trouble such as never was, as described by Daniel the prophet, Daniel 12:1. The signs of the times under the close of the sixth seal are speaking louder and louder. But shortly after the close of the seventh seal, everything upon earth shall cease for 1,000 years. So you see how inconclusive V.T. Hollis was on this subject of the seventh seal. He could follow Ellen G. White's inspiration on dates up to 1500 A.D. And then she gives 1500 A.D. to 1575. So that was the fifth seal, to 1755. But I'm saying that the fifth seal went all the way up to 1844. Okay, and Well, actually, after 1844, yeah, 1844. All right. Now, it says that at the 11th hour, that's what we're dealing with now, and our next subtitle for what we're reading is entitled Wheat and Barley, Each for a Penny. And then I'm going to get into this here Judgment of the Living tract by V.T. Hallett, the last tract that he wrote before he died, but it didn't get published in the Rod. And so Donnie A. there wouldn't publish it in the Rod after he took over and confiscated the Rod material, set up a printing press, and he said, well, this wasn't officially in the Rod, so he's not going to publish it. V.T. Hallett published it. He wrote it. And it certainly belongs in the Rod compilation. So we're going to read this tract, The Judgment of the Living at the 11th Hour. But first we're going to go ahead with what we're reading there. Wheat and Barley, Each for a Penny. This is in Shepherd Rod, Volume 2. Page 222. In our study of the seven seals, we reserve for the future explanation of the following scripture. Let's read that again. In our study of the seven seals, we reserve for the future explanation the following scripture. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts, a measure of wheat for a penny and three measures of barley for a penny. Revelation 6:6. Again, we turn the reader's attention unto the fact that the voice came from the throne. See chapter 5, verse 11. Therefore, the price of the cereals is fixed by the great judge. There must be something of the great importance in this symbol, for the great Yahweh himself is speaking. What could it be? Weymouth's translation reads as follows. A whole day's wage for a loaf of bread. A whole day's wage for three barley cakes. Weymouth translates the penny as a day's wage. We believe the words of Yeshua justify this. For the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is an householder, which went out early in the morning to hire laborers into his vineyard. When he had agreed to labor for a penny a day, he sent them into his vineyard. Matthew 20, verse 1 and 2. The penny is a fixed day's wage by the householder of the vineyard. Note that the barley is but one-third of the price of the wheat. In other words, one goes into the field and gathers only one measure of wheat and receives a full day's pay. But the other who works all day gathers three measures of pay at barley and receives no more than a day's wage, a penny. The symbols have a very close connection with the parable given by the Yeshua. Therefore, let the reader concentrate on the subject, for here is a truth worth our earnest attention. Okay, and he went out about the third hour and saw others standing idle in the marketplace, and said unto them, Go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right I will give you. And they went their way. Well, this is at the third hour. Well, what about that first hour that Moses was called to work in, and the children of Israel? Well, that's why Yahshua said, to those at the third hour. He said, why are you standing here idle? Go ye also into the vineyard. Well, what does it mean? Go ye also into the vineyard. It means that there is other people already working in the vineyard. And it come time that then for those that are standing idle at the third hour to go and work in the vineyard also. Because the children of Israel that came out in 1500 B.C., 1500 years before, their descendants had been working in the vineyard for 3 hours. From 1500 to the cross was a three parabolical period there. And so the children of Israel were working in the vineyard, and they were called at the first hour in 1500 B.C. to work in the vineyard under Moses. Well, when Moses passed off the scene, he passed the charge on to Joshua to take charge, and then when Joshua passed off the scene, he passed it on to his successor, and each successor for the next 1500 years worked in the vineyard for the first three parabolic hours. Okay. So now, at the cross, Yahshua comes and he says, well, it's time for new workers to go into the vineyard. In other words, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the 12 tribes of Israel have been working in the vineyard for 1500 years, the first three parabolic hours. So he says, and he went out about the third hour, and what hour was that? 27 A.D., when Yahshua turned 30 years old and started his ministry. And that was the beginning of the third parabolic hour. No. That was at the closing of the third parabolic hour. Because the children of Israel under Moses had the first three parabolic hours to work in. And Yahshua was one of those descendants of the house of Israel. He came through the tribe of Judah and the seed of David. David was 1,000 years before the cross, so Yahshua, he came through the seed of David in the Old Testament, and the three parabolic hours came to an end when Yahshua died on the cross. So Yahshua was also part of those working in the vineyard at the third hour. Okay. So he went out about the third hour, and he saw others standing idle in the marketplace, and he said unto them, go ye also into the vineyard which there is right, I will give you. And they went their way. And again, he went out about the sixth and ninth hour and did likewise. And about the 11th hour, he went out and found others standing idle and saith unto them, why stand ye here all the day idle? They said unto him, because no man hath hired us. He said unto them, go ye also into the vineyard, which there is right, that shall ye receive. Matthew 20, verse 3 to 7. Well, why was it nobody else had hired these people that were standing out in the marketplace? Because they were hirelings, the foremen, the leaders of each one of those parabolic hours, they were hirelings. They weren't the true shepherd. If they'd been the true shepherd, they would have recognized the workers when they were available to work in the vineyard, and they would have hired them. But Yahshua, as being the true shepherd, the great shepherd of the flock, it says, he's the true shepherd. And so when it come time for these parabolic hours to end and begin, Yahshua came at each and every one of those parabolic hours, and he hired the next new workers to go work in the next hour. All right. The householder in the parable has reference unto Yahweh the Father. And now I've had contention with this before. He tells us it was Yahweh the Father. I say the householder was Yahshua, the Son. Of course, he's the one that literally, physically went out about the third hour and hired the disciples to work in the vineyard with him. To work in the vineyard with him. So the householder in the parable has reference unto Yeshua, the Messiah, for the parable is to reveal the kingdom of heaven. And so, who is the one that literally, physically, spiritually revealed the kingdom of heaven? It was Yeshua. Because if he hadn't have come, the disciples could have never got that revelation from the Father in heaven through some prophecy, through some prophet that the kingdom of heaven has come. It was impossible for the kingdom of heaven to come without Yeshua coming himself and introducing it and giving the timeline when it was to be set up. So, the householder in the parable has a reference to Yeshua the Savior, for the parable is for the revealing of the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, the vineyard is the world. Now, this is another typo by V.T. Hollow. He left out one two-letter word, and that was the preposition in. And so it made a different meaning, it put the wrong meaning on the subject. Therefore, the vineyard, V.T. Hollow says, is the world. No, the vineyard is in the world. Because the vineyard was concentrated right there in Jerusalem. And the hill countries of Judea, that's where the vineyard was located at when Yahshua came to this earth. He was born in Bethlehem, and he grew up. And when he turned 30 years old, he went and told the disciples. He called them, and then they accepted. He said, "Now go work in the vineyard." So you can't say the vineyard is the world. Yeah, the vineyard is in all the world, wherever you have Yahweh's people scattered at. Then that's where the vineyard would be found. But the vineyard is not found outside of where Yahweh's people are not at. And true, Yahweh's people is in all the world. So wherever you have living, inspired prophets, apostles working, they are sent to work in the vineyard in the world, all over the world. In that sense, you can say the vineyard is the world. But the vineyard starts out in just one location. Wherever Yahweh's people are concentrated at, that's where the vineyard is at. Because when he told the disciples, before he went back to heaven, he says, "Go not into the way of the Pharisees or the Gentiles." Why? Why did he tell them that? He said, "Go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." Those are the only ones that are qualified to first be gathered into the vineyard. And they're in the vineyard. Or to be gathered into the kingdom, I mean. Because they're in the vineyard. So what was the first lost sheep of the house of Israel that Yahshua found? He went out and found the first one. After he told the disciples, go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, Yahshua went out and found, Zacchaeus up in a sycamore tree. He said, "Come down, I must abide at your house today." And Zacchaeus came down. And what did Yahshua say? Why, he was one of the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So he set an example there for the disciples to follow. He said, "The Spirit will direct you to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, just like it directed me today. The Spirit directed me to look up in that tree and see that little man perched up there in Zacchaeus, because he was a lost sheep of the house of Israel. And he must be harvested today." And indeed he was. The parable cannot refer to one literal day of the 12 hours. Okay. Well, the thing is, The 12-hour literal day is a symbol of the working in the vineyard, 12 hours, not 11. The others tend to make you, cause you to understand that you only work in the vineyard 11 hours, and the 12th hour is reserved because the sun goes down at the 12th hour, so the others don't know how to count the 12, he only knows how to count the 11. Ben Roden followed him, he could only count to 11. Verlus Johnson followed Ben Roden, he could only count to 11. But John 11:9 says, I sure told the disciples, he says, work while you have the light. He said, are there not 12 hours in the day? Well, there you have it right there. And here Beat the other comes along and says, the parable cannot refer to one literal day of 12 hours. Well, that's true. It couldn't refer to one literal day of 12 hours. Okay, let's go ahead. Into which Yahweh has made five calls for laborers. The fifth call is for the working in the 12th parabolic hour during the harvest time, during the general living time. Vitihalif didn't know this, you see. For laborers in the vineyard world, okay, he got parentheses world, in the world, for there is no record where Yahweh raised five congregations or organizations. Oh no, where he raised five church organizations in one day and had them operating all at the same time. Therefore, the calls in the parable must extend over a period of the world history in connection with the church. And that period, Yahshua allegorically compares to a 12-hour day. Okay, so he does. But I know Vitihalif wrote it. He wrote that the 12-hour day, allegorically. But then he can only count to 11 when he starts trying to explain those 12 working hours. He can only explain 11 of them. And to which the hard labors on five different occasions. If we locate the time to which each one of these calls refer, then we shall fully comprehend the lesson and the time in which we are living. Notice he tells us that if we can locate the time under which each one of these calls refer, well, he located the time those calls are made up to 1844. When the ninth hour call laborers were called at the end of the ninth hour, the seventh day Adventists to work in the tenth and the 11th hour. So Vitihalif, he could only go up to 1844. And he thought that he had the 11th hour identified and the time it opened began, but he didn't. And that's why he's in his grave today. And of course, he couldn't live to this time anyway because he's too old, but that's why they're all in their graves. Vitihalif, Ben Roden, and Verlus Johnson is because they could not, because they did not understand the 12 parabolic hour, they all died and went into their graves with a disappointment. Vitihalif was disappointed in 1955 when he got sick and went to the hospital, and there died of a heart attack. Before he died, he says, well, told his secretary, or whatever, his nurse, I mean, Ron Pell, he says, whatever happens to me, he says, go on with the next movement. And he says, just move on with it. And he said that before he died, the branch is the next great movement. Well, that branch is the next great movement, is that fifth group of laborers found in Matthew 20, verse 6. And Vitihalif had been preaching for 25 years that he was that fifth group of laborers. So what movement was he talking about? There was no more movements after the fifth group. Matthew 26, there's no more, but Vitihalif, so what is he talking about, move on to the next movement? He was just completely in a fog. He was just completely out of inspiration on any of it. And so he died a disappointed man. There was one other person that died a disappointed man. because he didn't apprehend and understand the ending of his prophecy, and that was William Miller in 1844. He was so terribly disappointed he couldn't move on with the Adventist, and so he died 5 years later after the disappointment in 1844. He died in 1849, a disappointed, disillusioned man. Well, Leach Ellis died a disappointed, disillusioned man after all he had accomplished. And Ben Roden died a very disillusioned, disappointed man. His wife took over the reins. She died a very disillusioned, disappointed person. Buck Roden took over from his mother. He died a disappointed, disillusioned, deluded individual. And Rollis Johnson took over in 1970 from Ben Roden, and he ended up dying a disillusioned, deluded individual. So what happened? It's because he didn't have inspiration on the 12 hours in a day. They only had inspiration, they thought, on the 11. They thought 11 was all that there was, and so that's why they ended up all dying a very disappointed, disillusioned death. So now, if we can locate the time in which each one of these calls refer, then we shall fully comprehend the lesson and the time in which we are living. So, apparently, V.T. Hollis did not comprehend the time when all the five were that came to fulfillment. And so, and neither did anybody that succeeded him until 2002, when I succeeded Willis W. Johnson and identified the fifth group of laborers as belonging to the House of David, Judgment of the Living, seventh seal opening, closing of the sixth seal. Then the puzzle cleared up. We shall endeavor to prove that the parable has reference to the great and to the wheat and the barley, each for a penny. Note that the householder bargained only with those he hired first. Also note that they went to work in the morning. He hired the laborers at five intervals. Now, what is an interval? It is a space between each hour. Whenever the third hour was up, the interval was then for the new laborers for the next step to step into the next hour, the fourth hour. For instance, at the cross, the disciples finished out the third hour with the Yeshua, and then they, because they were called in the Old Testament time, until the death of Yeshua, the New Testament didn't begin. Four of them were 3 hours apart, but the fifth and the last call was only 2 hours later than the fourth, which was at the 11th hour. You see? But the fifth and the last call was only for 2 hours later than the fourth, which was at the 11th hour, just 1 hour before sunset. So, you see, V.T. Hollis had a hard time latching on to number 12. So if I were going to write this, I would say for the four of them were 3 hours apart, but the fifth and the last call, and that was for laborers at the closing of the 11th parabolic hour to work in the 12th parabolic hour, he says only 2 hours later, then the fourth, which was at the 11th hour. So he says the fourth hour call was at the 11th hour. No, the fourth call was at the ending of the ninth hour in 1844. And B.T. Hollis, Ben Roden, and Rollis Johnson, all in that order, worked in the 10th and the 11th hour respectively. And Rollis Johnson brought the close of the 11th hour and the sixth seal, just 1 hour before sunset. And as B.T. Hollis said, he didn't have inspiration on that, but I would insert that in there. Rollis Johnson brought the end of the 11th hour just 1 hour before sunset. And that 1 hour before sunset has to be, and that's a whole movement. That 1 hour is a whole fast movement of its own. It's time of the harvest and the judgment of the living. The ancient time clock, fearing that some may not understand the ancient time clock, we feel a brief explanation may be necessary. To make it more comprehensive, we call the reader's attention under the chart, page 22. In the days of Yasir, and even now in some countries, time is regulated by the sunset at 12 o'clock. Near the equator, where the days and nights are continually equal, the sun sets at 12 and rises at 12. Therefore, 6 o'clock would be noon hour in the light part, according to the chart. And at 6 o'clock in the dark part would be midnight. This is the kind of time Yahshua used in the parable. Therefore, the first call to the ones with whom the householder agreed for a penny a day would have been at 12 o'clock a.m. sunrise. So that would be Moses, see? The first call would be Moses, 12 a.m. sunrise. Well, it would be at the end of 12 a.m. because the sun rises starting the first hour of the daylight. That would be, so, yeah, it would rise at the conclusion and the completing of the 12 hours of night. The second call at the third hour, that was at the cross. Now notice, in the parable of Matthew 20, it says, Yahshua, the householder, he went out early in the morning. Well, see, even in the third hour, Yahshua went out early in the morning. He didn't wait till the third hour of the day to go out and start calling the disciples. He went out early in the morning. That's the reason why you have that early in the morning to start each call. Each call is early in the morning. The second call is the third hour, and I might add, early in the morning, is just 3 hours after the sunrise. So actually, third hour after sunrise is not early in the morning, literally, but parabolically, that's when each one of these calls was made, early in the morning. And consequently, when he called them, they each worked a whole 12 hours in a day. Each one of these calls, they all worked 12 hours. The third hour call, they were called early in the morning, but they parabolically put in 12 full hours. Because in each one of these here times, the verse history, when you had these movements, you always had a judgment that brought the movement to a close. There always came judgment at the end of each movement. Think about it. There was a judgment at the flood. Okay? That was a movement. By Noah. 120-year movement. And there was judgment at the end of that movement. And then you had the children of Israel coming out of Egypt. That started a movement with Moses. And what happened? It was judgment that brought them out, the judgment on Pharaoh and the Egyptians that brought the children of Israel out of Egypt. Always judgment closes out a movement. Okay, so the third call at the sixth hour would be at noonday. Okay, so at the sixth hour, parabolically, those that was called at the sixth hour, and that was William Miller in our day, they had 3 parabolic hours to work in, and they were called early in the morning in their time. And they literally worked 12 parabolic hours. They worked literally 12 hours, but they only had 3, and I'll change it up. They only had three parabolical hours from the 6th through the 9th. William Miller writes, 1833 to 1844. But they literally worked 12 hours in the day. In other words, their message was preached from daylight to daylight by somebody in the Millerite movement. Okay. So it says the third call at the sixth hour would be at noonday. The fourth interval at the ninth hour would be 3 hours after the noon. So the ninth hour belongs to the sixth hour call. 7, 8, and 9 belongs to William Miller and the First Day Adventist, 1833 to 1844. Okay, so now the next, there's only 3 more hours left now after the ninth hour is over, 1844. There's 10 and 11 and 12 are the 3 hours that are left. But they're split up between two movements. The 10th and the 11th is in the 4th movement by the Adventists with four prophets fulfilling that movement of the 10th and the 11th hour of the 4th group. And that was Ellen G. White, V.T. Hollis, Ben Rhodes, and Rhodes Johnson. Would be the 3 hours after the noon hour, or 3 o'clock by the modern time, which would be the ninth hour of the day. And when that ninth hour was over with, or actually the fifth call, then 2 hours later at the 11th hour. So at the close of the 11th hour, 2002, we had the fifth call for the fifth group of believers, Matthew 20, verse 6. Because Rhodes, Ben Roden, and Vita Hollis was all a part of that fourth call that the Adventists were called under in 1844. With the previous explanation of Revelation 6:6, a measure of wheat for a penny and 3 measures of barley for a penny, we shall endeavor to prove that the symbols point back to the parable of the householder and Yahshua. We allegorically looked forward to John's vision. If the explanation perfectly fits the parable and the vision in harmony with the Elohim's book and law, and a present truth lesson is derived therefrom, then only must we accept it as the truth. The morning call, Matthew 20, verse 1 and 2. For the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is an householder, which went out early in the morning to hire laborers into his vineyard. And when he had agreed with the laborers for a penny a day, he sent them into his vineyard. Yahshua could have no reference to any other people than Israel after the flesh, coming out of Egypt with Moses. For they are the one with whom Yahweh bargained and sent into his vineyard, hyphen, the world. Well, the thing is, his vineyard, as Isaiah 5:7 says, the vineyard, the house of Yahshua of hosts, is the house of Israel. If you put the preposition, it's in the house of Israel. So, the vineyard is in the house of Israel. It's not. It should be first in the house of Israel. In all the world, their labor consisted of representing the Creator or a householder and giving us the Bible. The psalmist has made the following record of the agreement. He has remembered his covenant forever, the word which he commanded to 1,000 generations, which covenant he made with Abraham and his oath unto Isaac, and confirmed the same unto Jacob for a law and unto Israel for an everlasting covenant. Psalm 105, verse 8 to 10. The covenant was made with Abraham, which was only a promise unto him and his seed. But Abraham obtained not the promise, his oath unto Isaac. That is to say, Yahweh solemnly declared that he will carry out his agreement. But Isaac, even as his father, obtained not the promise. He confirmed the same unto Jacob, and that is he administered, settled, or established it. For the covenant made with Abraham was realized by Jacob as a law, but unto Israel for an everlasting covenant. Hence Israel received the promise. Therefore it was Israel that went to labor in the vineyard after they departed from Egypt. According to the word that I covenanted with you when you came out of Egypt, so my spirit remaineth among you. Fear ye not. Haggai 2:5. Isaiah speaks of the vineyard, which in itself was a symbol of the world, Isaiah 5. So this is Isaiah 5:7 says the vineyard of the Yeshua, the host, is, and I put the preposition, in the house of Israel. It's not in the world. It spreads into the world after it is set up in the house of Israel. Therefore, the householder, as early to our call for labors in his vineyard, applies unto the call of Israel out of Egypt. Why is it called early in the morning? At that time, Moses was writing the Bible, which is the light of the world. Therefore, very early for the scriptures has just begun to be written. Thus, the period since the Bible came is called the day according to the parable, which signifies that the written word of Yahweh is the light of the world. Okay, I'll put that again. Which signifies that the written word of Yahweh is with the representation as the light of the world, and the Bible says there, I believe in John 1, that Yahshua is that light, that he brought that light from heaven. Okay, that's the end of our explanation on the morning call. That's the first call, at early in the morning, with the children of Israel. And we're going to reserve the rest of this study for our next study. This brings the close of our study. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour call. It's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. Dusty Roads and Sandal Feet. To believe in that man of Galilee, for there's nothing in this world he couldn't do. Change the water into wine, cast out demons, heal the blind, and that's why I believe in that man of Galilee. Dusty roads and sandal feet, oh, the journey was complete. To a place in the plan where someday we all shall meet, the author of the story, Dusty Roads and Sandal Feet. I have reason to believe in that man of Galilee, for he walked those dusty roads for you and me. Often prostrate and prone, carried his burden all along, as he journeyed along that road to Calvary. Dusty roads, sandal feet, oh, the journey was complete. From the manger to the cross, through the golden street, to a place in the plan where someday we all shall meet. The altar of the story, dusty roads, sandal feet. Dusty roads are his companion, desert places his abode. Sandal feet were often weary underneath a heavy load. judgment day. Dusty roads and the field, all the journey was complete. From the manger to the throne, there's those golden streets to a place in the land where someday we all shall meet. The author of the story, Dusty Roads and the Field. Dusty Roads and the Field, how would you like to meet that man named Joshua coming down your street? Would you be like Zacchaeus and climb up in a tree? Or would you be like Jonah who wanted to see? Dusty roads, sandal feet, oh, the journey was complete. From the manger to the cross, through those golden streets, to a place in that land where someday we all shall meet. Author of the story, Dusty Roads and Sandal Feet.